Ain't That Swell presents Core Lords.
We're on, mate. Welcome back to the Ain't That Swell Temple. Our first ever guest.
Thank you. Good to be here, Smiv.
Mate, brought you in here because there's a few things I wanted to talk to you about. The Adaptive World Championships, you're up here as part of that. You're in the support crew for one of the athletes. Yeah, tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I'm up here with Cliffo from Tuncurry. So, it's the Adaptive... I don't know what the actual name is, but it's the Adaptive World Tour. This is the first ever event in Oz as part of that World Tour. So I think there's five... There's five tour events, and they're usually like Hawaii, maybe Costa Rica, or they run one in conjunction with the US Open, I think the final. But this is the first ever time it's come to Oz, and it's come to Byron Bay at the pass. So, yeah, I'm a disability worker in Foster, and he is a client that we have in our organisation. So we surf with him twice a week down there. He only got back in the water a year ago. We took him to the Aussie titles mid last year. He got a second, and then he said, I want to compete in this event that comes to Oz. And so here we are, we're supporting him, me and my mate Nick, and he's going off. He's into the semis tomorrow. It's the finals day tomorrow, so he's going to have a semi and then a final if he gets through. And he's in the prone assist category, so prone meaning lying down, and they need assistance. So... there's like eight or nine categories, and that's the one he's in.
And talk us through your role. So you've, there's basically been waves all week, and the peak of it seems to be today that the wind's gone south, the swell's east, so that's perfect cons for this pass, Main Beach, Clark's kind of section, which is where the event is. Couldn't ask for better cons, really.
The conditions have been insane. I think we've been here for a week now. We did three prep days prior to the event. So the event went from a Monday to a Friday. We got up here on a Thursday evening. So we hit the bank there at the pass on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday just to get the reps in, to feel it out, a point break and how it was actually going to work, because such long rides, bit of a sweep. And when you're on a limited time frame, 25-minute heats, that can go click of a finger. So we had to just sort of dial it all in, who was going to sort of push, who was going to collect, whether we were better to kick him out in the channel and come back out through the lineup and try and pick a wide one, or whether we were to come in and run around and all that sort of stuff. So pretty much since we've been here, it hasn't gotten under two, and it's just hovered in that like 4 to 2 foot range, and it's really hugging on the inside of the pass, I think. It's called Tomo's or Captain Cook section. Just been going through there at just the perfect pace, perfect tempo, hugging the bank, and that's where they've held the event. So lucky, because, I mean, the event was mobile, but I think it had to remain inside the bay, and they've just nailed it. Like, little east swell. It was predicted to be east winds, but they never puffed over, like, 5 to 10 knots, so it was always rideable, and it's just been... day after day. Today was the peak, but there's a lot of swell today, but almost like in a way there's like too much, because there's a few washthroughs and the wind's howling, which makes it difficult. So they had to postpone it, didn't kick off till midday. But yeah, they've been so blessed and everyone's like buzzing, I think, around the event.
Wow, that's some advantage for Cliffo to have, having a, you know, former pro surfer, QS surfer, like he competed at the elite level. In his corner. I can't imagine many others have that kind of intel.
Yeah, I think it's definitely an advantage. I'm not going to lie there. And the other, so there's two of us working with him, so a pusher and a collector, and that's a guy by the name of Nick Coughlin, who was also, he's probably, 5 years older than me, and he was a QS surfer as well, and we just happened to work for the same organisation down there. So he came to... he hadn't been in the water for 17 years, Cliffo, right? He had an accident when he was in his early 20s. He's now in his 40s. He was an everyday surfer in the lead up to that accident. But just didn't feel like he had the support or the confidence or whatever. And then one day he said, I'm going to give this a crack. And he went to our boss and said, want to get back in the water. And he goes, well, we've got a perfect team available. Like, let's do this. And to have Nick there and myself, and yeah, like you said, like we do know how to read waves, and that's a key advantage because we are the one who is essentially choosing that wave for him. And having that read is so special. And yeah, it wasn't until I got here that I realized that some individuals don't have that luxury. So they're just getting volunteers that have signed up to help at the event, literally push them in. Mm. And it's probably a different person every heat, so you don't get that rapport. So it is a huge advantage because it's wave selection, really. And they are, like, Cliff's so capable. He can read a wave amazingly. And when he's on the wave, he can execute it, but it's essentially us picking it for him.
Man, and I mean, you've been around some amazing surfing feats and inspiring surfing feats the world over, and waves of consequence and small waves and everything in between. Like, you know, what's it like to be a part of an event like this and, you know, meeting the competitors and kind of the energy around the contest?
Yeah, it's been the sickest week, eh? I think I was telling someone before, they're so classic, you know, when, I guess not your chips are down, but when you've come from hardship and things, and you have this way about you, I feel, like this lightness, and they're just taking the piss out of themselves, and like I hear them like, calling up the next heat, and they'll be like peg leg Daves in the next heat, you know, and like the beach just cracks up and they're all like yelling out at each other, yeah. And I think because in the scale of things, it's quite a new tour and it's a family, right? Like, you've got 100 people that probably travel around the world together, and you can just see how tight they are. And then that's just the competitors, and then they've all got a little bit of an entourage because you need support if you're able to do things. And so there's just this like amazing buzz, like families and friends and people from all over the world just hanging out. They're stoked on what the waves are like. They're stoked to be in Australia. They're loving hearing like a new person come onto the tour and get those chats. And there's just, I mean, I haven't been around a surf comp for a long time, but the camaraderie and the vibes are like sky high. And it just makes you like, we just feel so lucky to be in it. And it just puts everything crazy into perspective. And the few surfs that I've gone for around the event, I've tried to reflect on like how lucky I am to be able to do what I love to do fully able. And that just taps you into this new like flow in the water. And, you know, you just like let go. It's all good. Like, look how lucky we are. And then that ends up making you have an amazing session. And so I think it's just been mostly like how strong friendship is, how lucky we are to be able to share the ocean and all do that together. And it's surfing at the end of the day, it's not that serious.
Yeah, exactly. That shifting of the lens can be so helpful with surfing. I mean, you know, right now, last couple of weeks, Kira's been cooking, and you go up there and you experience a very different side of surfing. You know, everyone's out there to get the one, and that's what matters. It's pure selfishness at its most aggressive, and you know, respect is given to those who kind of game the system and get the one. And what you're experiencing at this adaptive world tour event is like the polar opposite of that.
Yeah.
And the lens shift is now just giving gratitude, like as you said. And yeah, it's interesting when your intentions around surfing completely shift and it becomes less about just getting the one and that's all that matters, and it becomes about the just connecting with energy and enjoying the ocean. It's almost impossible to have a bad surf, which is crazy. Because it's fucking easy to have a bad surf. Like, if you like in a normal world where the mind is not trained and the mind is just let to run free without a second thought given, and it's just the mind functions as this culture teaches it to function, which is just get the best wave you can regardless of what you have to do to get it. And yeah, then it's almost like it's almost kind of guaranteed you're going to have a bad surf in a way, because it's so rare that you're going to get exactly the wave you're looking for.
I don't know if it's because I didn't grow up on them, but I feel like point breaks, it felt to me like you either had a good or a bad surf. There was no in between. And that was always my experience too. And it was mostly negative because I would just get hung up on the crowd factor and the fact that you see all these people on good waves, and naturally your body reacts like, oh, I want one of those, right? And you just never get them. Because as soon as you want that, you just start behaving like you want one. It doesn't come. And I've felt like this event, they've been smack bang in the middle of the pass. So if you take off up the top, you've got to kick out. Not that the bank's really shaping all the way through, but if you're surfing the pass currently in the last week or two, you have come in contact with multiple people that are in this event, and it's got this like trickle down energy. So everyone using it is showing more respect. Seems to be like a more vibrant, yeah, like a sharing lineup, because they know they're in the presence of this event. They're passing by people, they're hearing their stories, they're chatting, they're probably inspired by them. So it has that. And when you said like what's it been like at the event to watch too, is it's pretty cool coming over a wave and seeing someone on an absolute bomb and your competitor like cheering them on. Like, I don't think anyone in the QS is like watching Gabby get a bomb and go, yes, Gabby, you know. So to see that, it's just like, yeah, it's just like, oh, this is sick, you know.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, the ordinary mind without training naturally lapses into envy and jealousy when you see someone get a sick one. It just comes up in you. It's and, you know, you can acknowledge that and let it go and move past that and wish that person well or be stoked for him. But the actual natural reaction is one of, yeah, jealousy and envy, which is, and it doesn't just apply to surfing. This is like a kind of a universal law. Like that is something I learned recently, like from this Buddhist monk who's doing the rounds up here, is that, yeah, the ordinary mind is perverse when left untrained. And these impulses that we have, like amongst the unconscious mass who do no mind training, these kind of negative thought patterns just run rampant and they're almost encouraged or they're never deterred. Like, and that's, you know, what a way to live. Like that's such a negative way to live. But yeah, that's just the nature of the what do they call it? The drunken monkey mind that we've got.
Yeah. I reckon there's a fair few drunken monkeys at the point. and yeah, I mean, I can't really talk too much about point, but I know I've felt that sensation of watching people get waves many a time, right? Like, it comes up. You're praying they fall. Like, you would...
It happened to me moments ago. I just come in from the water and there was barrels and I seen this dude knife one that was Mantle's, a long traveler, and I'm like, fuck, I hope he doesn't make that. Like... But like that's just the thought. That thought's not me, and I'm not. That thought come up, and as soon as it came up, I watched it, I observed it, and was like, yeah, fuck, no, like that's the natural, ordinary, perverse mind.
I think I still do that, but it's kind of like funny, right? It's like, oh, fall, but if he doesn't, like, it's all good. Like, it's just kind of like a funny thing you might say to someone in the lineup next to you. Oh, this guy's gonna fall. Are we getting it? And like, if he doesn't, it's no one, who cares? Like, there's another one coming. But if he does, well, then see it, you're going, right? But it's not taking it too serious and not letting it affect your whole experience. Like, being able to, like, okay, I missed that one, reset, and just reset throughout the whole surf.
Mm. And there's this irrational fear in surfing that by wishing someone well or congratulating them on getting a mental one, that you're going to, like, fluff up their ego and give them confidence, and then they're going to like have, you know, more propensity to paddle around you and get more waves. Whereas because it's like a competition for resources, generally you want to belittle or degrade or ignore someone's feats so they don't get the confidence to think that they're ripping and thus get on a roll and start stealing your resources.
Yeah, you just sum up Australia in general, like outside of the water and in.
Yeah, well, I think it's actually, yeah, not just Australia, but that's just that's the mind. That's the human mind when left untrained. And, you know, you can just as easily wish someone well and congratulate them and be happy for them. Like, it's not necessarily the default position, but, you know, with a very slight bit of awareness, you can sit in that space just as easily, and it's better for both of you. Yeah, it's a hard one, though, because it's kind of true in surfing sometimes that you congratulate people and they do puff up and get full of self-importance. And, you know, that's the culture is one of, like, it's deeply lacking in humility, it seems to me. Like, well, not always. Like, depends on where you're from. And, but, yeah, it can be lacking in humility. So, I don't know. You're still better off being stoked for someone.
For sure. If it's a natural stoke, be stoked for them. And you can, I swear you can almost pick your target of who you need to, who's okay for a bit of a prop up. And with vocals, like, that was sick, or who you might just acknowledge that was good and then just let it go, you know. It's my experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to get to a point where I'm just stoked for everyone, because it's better for you to be like that. They're negative emotions. Envy, jealousy, degrading people. It's just not good for you. Man, another thing we did together recently, you've been running breathwork workshops up here. Something you've been doing kind of all up and down the East Coast. And, yeah, it was amazing. Thanks for having us. And I'm always down to participate in workshops like that. It's trippy when you do that kind of work. Like, you know, we essentially did like a version of holotropic breathing, Wim Hof, Chumo, whatever you want to call it. They're all pretty closely entwined. Interestingly, all descended out of the Himalayas. Well, I guess holotropic breathing has more of a connection to the psychedelic movement and Stanislav Grof and that, but the Chumo and the Wim Hof, yeah, that stuff comes out of that kind of Himalayan, Tibetan, Buddhist, Hindu kind of culture. But so there's just some magic to it, eh? When you do it with other people, when there's a whole room here. Do you notice that?
Oh, absolutely.
It's so much more powerful.
You do it on your own and it's good. It's great. It's such a beneficial and practice, and makes you feel, I think, oneness and connected. And then put multiple people in a room, even if they're strangers, it'll intensify. Keep adding people and make that space intimate, and then add some people that you know throughout the community or who have similar wavelengths, and watch it go. It's so incredible, and that's probably the favorite part of the workshop, is getting everyone into that zone. And the ones I've been doing up here, I feel like there is that, everyone seems to know each other on some sort of degree. And I think because they're coming to my workshops, I've kind of got a bit of a friendship with them too, so there's this like trust and feeling in them. And yeah, you just see people let their guard down and step into that space, and then what can happen is limitless, really. And it's different for every person how they feel, but yeah, it's much more intense in an intimate space with as many people as possible, really.
And you're performing a role where you're guiding people through this, and then afterwards you're also performing a role where, you know, you're open to chat with people and hear from them what's come up, what's shifted, what's transformed. What are some of the stories you've been told, without being too specific, obviously?
The stories just go from anywhere from share, like coming up and saying thank you so much, because I was able to feel things that I perhaps haven't felt for a long time, whether that be gratitude or trust in themselves or they're on the right path. That the integration phase after you've done, say we did a half an hour breathe up, so it's similar to holotropic but just a more intro, shorter duration, but essentially doing the similar breathing techniques, implementing some holds, And then afterwards, there's this amazing 20 minutes where your body just gets to marinate and absorb in this space that you've just given it. And I feel like that's where people always explain to me what they've experienced, what they've felt. And yeah, like I said, so it goes from, oh my God, I saw this, or I saw, had some intuition about this, or I saw a past relative who said something to me, or it might not have even said, but they can just feel, right? It's like, might not be what's said, it might not be anything, but there's some, a feeling behind it. And so it's like, you know, people that have passed in their lives have shared a message or let them know that they're on the right path. It can be almost like visions and things that have come up from their childhood, perhaps, that they were missing pieces of a puzzle on a healing journey, and then they found a missing link that they then think has set them on a new path to find out some more stuff. I've had people say, like, I can't go home, I want to keep breathing now. And it's funny when you hold that space for multiple people, everyone's coming there with a different experience around breath and life, right? So one person might be having a huge release or feeling intense sensation, while the other person might be just going through the motions. So you can't give everybody exactly what they want. So when I was asked, can we keep breathing? I said, oh, with all due respect, like, there's people over there about to really pop off here and we got to control the whole room. And I said, you can't really, I mean, not I said, but in those situations, I don't know when the limit is for her, like, for that individual to, like, she could keep breathing for 3 hours and still not feel that. So all types of things, but it's mainly just the process of those breathing practices are to hijack the usual brain mechanism, to tap out of that and to let your body release what it needs to. And 9 times out of 10 for somebody, it's that experience, like, whoa, I've never felt that before. That felt so good. I need to tap back into that because I'm so calm now. I, like, feel like I want to go home and, like, hug my family and friends. And I kind of feel like I've been perhaps on the wrong path and blowing it in certain ways, and this is hopefully going to bring me back. It's more those things.
That is, there's such a direct line between that and the psychedelic experience, the ego dissolution that you get when you take mushrooms or LSD. And yeah, it's so interesting. What you described, it was exactly the experience that I had. Like, I do 4 to 6 rounds of Wim Hof every day, but I don't get that experience that we had in that group the other day. And also what I found is I don't generally let myself unwind afterwards. I usually get it done and then I'm up. You know, I'm fucking ripping into the day. And I wanted to do that. As soon as I finished, I was like, all right, I'm full of beans. Now I'm going to go do chores and shit. But I was kind of like forced to lay there. And at the start, I was like kind of restless. And then I relaxed into it and it was the fucking trippiest thing, man. I started to have these intonations, these like glimmers of incidents of violence that I was a victim of growing up, just playing football, like just getting, you know, fucking just dog shots and just like brutally like laid out. And I realized that, like, I kind of started to be able to connect like this line from those incidents, and I kind of felt it in my stomach weirdly. And I feel like a lot of the trauma and the kind of memories we hold are kind of in that zone, or it kind of seems to. I've had the similar experience of a big dose of acid where all this like buried pain was just like, I felt it, I could see it in my guts, and I watched it start there and come up from my stomach through my chest, and on the acid it came out of my eyes and in the form of water, tears, which was, like, I remember closing my eyes and the tears kind of resembled all these little pellets, which was basically poison, and I was just fucking leaking this shit out of me, and the pain in my stomach went. And it was a similar experience with this breathing where I realized that, like, due to those incidents, the story, that one of the strongest stories I tell myself is that, like, I have the propensity to be violent, and that is due to those incidents and for the years afterwards, and even now with all the mind training and breath work I do, that is still a really powerful story that I tell myself. I fall back on it all the time mentally when I feel disrespected or wronged. It's like, I just pinch myself flogging the and I never follow through with it, thankfully, because I have that training. But it's still this story that I permit to tell myself. It's so deeply ingrained. So I felt that not like that. I just knew there was this knowingness of like, oh, that story's got to go. Like, you need to let go of that story and move past that, because it's trapping you in a place. It's holding you in this place. And yeah, it was. I'll never forget that. I didn't expect that, and especially because I finished the breath work and I was ready to go, and then it came like a few minutes afterwards, out of nowhere, seemingly. And you know, I was close to similar to the acid, close to crying. Like, I'd just an involuntary kind of upwelling of emotion was there, and I probably could have. I didn't really feel like I wanted to. I was kind of probably suppressing it. But it just goes to show that the power of these techniques, man, and that same feeling of like really wanting. I was just doing it with my partner, and like feeling the need to express more warmth and kindness and love to her, and like. These are such positive, powerful, and transformative emotions, experiences to undergo. And we should be undergoing them much more often. This should be like a weekly experience. Have you done any of these like extended versions of breathwork, like the 2-hour, you know, holotropic style that Stanislav Grof, the psychedelic kind of pioneer, made famous? And if you don't know who Stanislav Grof is, he was part of that first wave of scientists to study and understand the therapeutic benefits of psychedelics, and then they became criminalized, and he segued into breath work because he realized or he was told that they can get you to a very similar place, and then that became his focus from there on. And yeah, as far as I know, in the West, he kind of popularized these long-form breathwork sessions. But yeah, have you been a part of stuff like that?
Yeah, I haven't gone to like a holotropic ceremony, if you call it, but I've done, just sourced my own private sessions with a mate or on my own, with a guy called Matt Kinnair from Ulladulla, actually, from my hometown. So he's the first person that actually... I met him at golf course car park in Mollymook, and he had married an old friend of mine. I'm like, what do you do? And he's like, I'm a breathwork facilitator. I was like, what? Yeah. And I had been getting into breathwork, which I've spoken about on this potty, to get help with my sleep. And I'm like, wow, no way. And he's like, yeah, you want to do one? I said, absolutely. And like the week later, I did one. It was probably an hour and a half.
Wow.
And so the ones that I'm currently running in the workshop, when I'm doing a workshop style session, they're educational based, and then with the deeper breathe up at the end, so people have an understanding of what they're actually doing and why. And they're half an hour long. So I did an hour and a half with Matt, and it was like, say Wim Hof, you do 30 breaths. In my workshops, you might do 90 to 100 breaths and then go in your hold. So I guess Matt would probably, you'd be doing maybe 20 minute breathe up. So you're just intensifying everything and going deeper. And that's where I really learned that it's the integration phase that brings things out. Because while you're breathing, and you're breathing for that long, you kind of like, in a way, you're in and out of consciousness. And because you've shut your mind off too, it's hard to almost attach a thought and a feeling together, because you're in such a different space. You're so used to thinking something and then going, oh, how does that feel? But you almost can't. It's when you go into those holds or into the slower space afterwards that you have those releases. And had some like profound stuff go down. So yeah, I've done a few, and they've just helped me so much. And kind of like you just explained, like when you said, what do people normally say? It was basically what you just provided me with your experience. And I had something similar go on from the struggles in my life. And Yeah, so I just loved that power of that and wanted to bring that out in as many people as possible. And then also, last time I spoke to you, I don't think I had a ticket, a certificate, as you will, to facilitate breathwork, but I went and did that. And over that weekend, you're so immersed in all these practices that, like, yeah, that was, I went down there thinking I was going to learn how to facilitate, but it was basically, his mantra was, you're only going to take someone as deep as you've been yourself.
Mm.
And so for that weekend, we just did all types of stuff.
Wow.
And it was pretty crazy.
What coming did you out do?
Yeah. We did the thing that sticks out. Well, we just like pretty much practiced breath work and then like held space for people. And obviously everyone there is facilitating. And the reason probably why you've entered facilitation is that you've probably been through challenges of your own to take you there in the first place. So people are breathing, people are sharing, you're sharing your story. So as we spoke about that like atmosphere of having a community or a bunch of people, you've essentially got all this energy of people you're spending the weekend with, sharing emotions and stuff. So your breathwork exercises are heightened anyway. And he would run us through probably some hour ones and using all sound healing and essence in the air and just really creating this space for things to come out, which they do. And then also, I'm like you, I certainly have challenges with showing warmth and, you know, from the way we are, our design and upbringings and whatnot. And we did this really amazing morning where it was like a feminine meets masculinity and trying to understand the energy around that. So the men, it was probably half men, half women, this retreat course. There's probably like 20 people all up. So say 10 men got together. We went down and we set up this amazing room, got candles, swept it up, got fragrance, made it feel really, really comfortable. We greeted the girls as they came down, made them feel seen, welcomed, brought them in, you know, and just held this space for them and got them to breathe out all their whatever needed to come up. And then gave them the space to share afterwards. And they were just obviously really emotional and saying thank you so much. And then we went away and then they were able to do that for us as well. And it was just created this really cool, like people were able to share their struggles around it and that, you know, women see us and we see them. And there was just this really, instead of it being friction and us versus them mentality, which it sometimes can be, it was like really connected. And yeah, it was huge for me because I needed that at that time and still do.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like more and more I'm drifting away from external solutions, notably psychedelics, because they're kind of the only thing I know that gets you to this same place. And I'm favoring more just internal solutions, breathwork and meditation to reach that same place, just because, man, the psychedelic experience is intense and jarring, and it seems to be like a more direct but rougher route to the same place, the breathwork and the meditation. It's a bit more gradual, a bit more user-friendly. You got to put in more effort. You got to actually work for the release and work to get to that space. But as a result, it just seems to be a bit more of a more pleasant experience. The big trauma releases that come from ingesting big doses of psychedelics are fucking rattling for me. They're always rattling. Very few positive, like they're always end positive, the psychedelic experience, but the actual experience itself has seldom been an enjoyable one, because I just inevitably end up in this fucking spiraling wormhole of negativity, and then the fucking psychedelics just shake those pathways loose and you realize like, oh, I'm an idiot. That's the overwhelming realization, is you idiot. Like, what are you doing? Why are you thinking like that? And you're just like, that's your ego just dissolving and going back to that place of purity and connection and love and this more kind of Buddha nature, Christ consciousness, whatever you want to call it, this place that always exists eternally in every single one of us if we do the work to cultivate it.
I just want to speak to that because it has the same ebbs and flows and journey of a microdose, or I mean, sorry, not of a microdose, of a
macrodose,
a drug trip, right? Yeah, like you experience resistance, you experience overwhelm. I'm losing control here, and if you push through those things using your breath, what's on the other side can open up to that. And that's when I try and, when I'm guiding through and when I'm giving my cues, I try and express that and let that be known that it's not always going to feel like this. And the difference about it being drugs and your own breath is you have the accelerator, right? You are able to pump the brakes if you need to. You can drop it back a gear and slow down and then build up if needed. Whereas if you ingest something, and you're going to get a similar experience, but it's got the accelerator, right? You're just like, you're the passenger in the back, like buckled in, the child locks are on, and you can't get out of that car.
And your ego's the driver. Just swerving all over the joint.
So, I mean, yeah, and it's like it's free, right? And it's your, while we're trying to release control and let go of control, you still have a bit. And that's the difference in it. So whatever you favour, you might prefer the drugs. That's great. If it works for you, excellent, right? But breath work's another way to do that naturally.
Mm. Yeah. It seems to me that those who prefer the drugs, and I was one of them, it's like really it boils down to poor work ethic, like and not wanting to have to lift a finger, want something else to do the work for you. And also like a culture of like kind of there's a bit of cultural cachet. It's a good story to tell, you know, about the time you took too much acid or too many mushrooms. And I've told many of those stories. So no judgment, obviously. But there's a different culture around ripping in this way, and it's interesting now, like looking at where culture's at and you know what's going on in the Middle East and what's going on in our own neighborhood. Like we're in the throes up here of this fucking radical crime spree, like this endless run of petty thievery. I was chatting to one of the cops at jiu-jitsu this morning, and it was crazy to learn, like, there's just been so much theft, so many cars getting knocked off, you know, shit getting knocked off out of cars, like crazy amounts, like, you know, it's like a happening multiple times a week just in Ballina. And he was explaining that what's actually transpiring right now is you've got all these groms from these kind of poverty-stricken areas, big housing commission communities, Corakai, Casino, Lismore, the Tweed, and they've got TikTok, and they're just like trading off, like having these kind of competitions between the towns of how many cars they can steal, like, and filming it all and getting in these chases with cops. And then on top of that, you've got guys like Spanion, Anthony, a guy I kind of grew up with in Bondi, these monolithic online personalities with millions of followers who are like they're heroes to these hoodlum groms, and they're kind of in one way saying they've got the solutions, you know, I'm here to kind of help these kids and steer them away from a life of crime and shit, but really 90% of the content they put out there is glorifying that lifestyle and big upping themselves as these macho men. And I'm just like, wow, we're fucking we're swimming in a cycle of ongoing trauma and bullshit that's like, you know, it's the fucking working class versus the welfare class in this stupid race to the bottom. And I'm just like, wow, like what's the way out of this? And, you know, I went to a Buddhist kind of lecture the other day, a meditation group just at Suffolk Community Centre, and they were talking about how in the kind of Buddhist calendar or whatever, like that we're actually in a degenerate age. And you know, in the, I think in the Hindu calendar, it's the same deal. I think we're in like Kali Yuga, this like 10,000 years of like degeneracy or some shit.
And how far into it are we?
About, I don't know, like not that far. There's still a few thousand years to go. It's just like, and it feels like that. Like we're living in a reality that's so offensively stupid, where there's just like this glut of resources trapped at the top. There's these inane, endless wars. There's fucking petty thievery being celebrated in online viral ways, and you're kind of looking around, going, "Wow, this is so mad and so negative." And what's the out here? What's the solution? You know, we have these monkey minds that are just running rampant. And our culture of capitalism and materialism is only accelerating all of these negative attributes, encouraging these awful impulses, lust, desire, greed. So you just kind of, you want things like this to go viral. You want like breathwork and meditation to become part of the solution, and because it seems to me like the only way out. And funnily enough, like, you know, the Tibetans have been saying this for a good couple thousand years. Like, and I guess that, yeah, these kind of mountainous cultures that weren't colonized, so have retained this connection to their ancient ways. Yeah, they are these bastions of knowledge that we can learn from, and they also are the ones who understand better than anyone that we're in a degenerate age, we're in this Kali Yuga period, and so they're trying to kind of get the word out, and it's kind of making its way out through, you know, characters like Wim Hof, who is this, in my opinion, like a kind of figure that could have walked straight out of the Bible and probably will be canonized and given sainthood 100 years down the track. And from him, there's a kind of pyramid that descends, and you've got all these, like, he trains up all these breathwork people, one of whom was at your workshop, Benny.
Yeah.
He's a Wim Hof instructor up here. He is. A fucking wizard. And
yeah,
one of the great voices of sanity and purity through the whole flood period. That's where I became aware of him. He was doing these kind of chats on Instagram that were just like so pure and so true, and coming from such a place of deep calm and wisdom that he was unlocking through his breath work. So yeah, you just hope that this stuff starts to branch out into these like really depraved, degenerate communities. These people at war, these people stricken by poverty. You want the Wim Hofs and the Bennies and the Birches as opposed to the fucking Spaniards, you know, being heard and respected and followed.
Yeah, you do. I mean, the only thing I can speak to that is the way my mind works, if I think about all that negativity and stuff, you know, when like your mind can't go somewhere, it's, I mean, it knows it. It's not naive to it, but it wants to more focus on, naturally wants to more focus on like the bennies and what good is happening, right? And I feel like the numbers of people tapping into the powers of such practices like the breath or any modality of internal work, which then becomes external work or however you see it, like the numbers are growing, right? And that's the only way it's going to spread and get to these other areas that need it, like you've just mentioned, is by numbers growing. So I feel like we've lived somewhat very fortunate lives to be able to do this and spread this message to the capacity that we are. If you're from war-stricken or low socioeconomic, it's going to be harder to reach. But if we start, if everyone who is onto it already and wants to share it and is taking that route, starts with their community and their network, and then that work that becomes bigger and bigger, and then it expands and expands. That's the way it's going to happen.
Mm. Yeah, and it's kind of also like the karma of capitalism and increasing inequality. I was thinking about this too, like in the context of Australia anyway, the reason we've got this hectic crime problem and this explosion of these underground ex-cons in this kind of underground media realm is because we've alienated and ostracized and exiled the poor and the downtrodden into these huge clumps of public housing. And even when I was growing up in the city, like with Anthony and his fucking merry band of hoodlums, like I was subject to these same emotions of like, there's like a certain nihilism like that crept in, which was like even at 15, I understood that, you know, we were poor, we were renting, and our community was getting ripped out from under our feet. We're getting moved on because we didn't have the money to stay there. And there was just people flooding into our community with money. And I remember thinking like, this is unfair. Like, this is our home. Like we live here, we work here, we, like, there's nothing special about this place. Like, it's just an inner city beach. Like, we should be able to live in our community. And because we couldn't, we had no control over that. The one thing, it was kind of like, oh, the game is stacked against us. So, in my mind, I was like, oh, yeah, well, fuck it. I'll just control the waves then. Like, I'll just, I won't let you have one, you know, I'll fight you over it. And I would. And then for those guys who didn't surf, they were just, you know, just inner city hoodlums. It was the same mentality. It was like, oh, this game's rigged. We're just getting pushed around. We're disempowered. You know, we're at the bottom floor of a rigged economic system. So fuck it. We're just going to thieve and rob and beat. And that's what they did. And that's what they're still doing now. The next generation, only it's worse. It's more intense. And we've let that happen. And I spent like a good 5-10 years in the city writing for the newspapers about this, warning about this, that ripping the public housing out of the inner city and, you know, not having rent control and moving all of the poor people to the fringes of the cities and to the fringes of prosperity away from the bosom of opportunity was going to end real fucking badly. We'd already seen it end terribly in the States and these kind of more advanced predatory capitalist societies, and that we should, as Australians, fight against this phenomenon. We don't need to do this. We've got abundance here. But obviously, you know, that fell on deaf ears to a large extent, and now we're reaping the results of that, I guess.
And yeah, when you speak of those people and the backgrounds they've come from, they're coming from trauma, anger, frustration out of not being treated fairly. So for someone to walk up to them, I feel like, and say, I'll just do some breath work. Currently, they're just going to tell you to fuck off, right? Like, so I think breath work is like one small part of the puzzle, but all those issues that you spoke of need to be fixed, and everyone needs to be somewhat in alignment. And then the practices that make people feel good and make clarity of thought and therefore clarity of decision and empathy and gratitude come in to play. But until then, like, to say everyone should be doing breath work just feels like way up the ladder, you know?
Yeah. It seems unrealistic, doesn't it?
It does.
But then it doesn't need to be even those groms who do it. It can just as easily be those with all the money and power in this world who can do it, because they're the ones who really call the shots and determine how this system functions. So if they were to do some work there, and they're a more attainable kind of demographic, you know, like they've barked up the wrong tree their whole lives, they've accumulated all this wealth and still feel shallow and hollow and miserable, because that's all you'll ever feel if you fixate on material wealth your entire life. So, you know, for them to change their mindset, that could also bring about a more compassionate and kind society and system. And then, yeah, the trickle down of wellness.
Yeah, top down approach.
Then another part of our the breathwork workshop was you introduced us to several other modalities of breathing, many of which have an application of surfing, many of which you kind of learn from surfing, or a few of which have a kind of relationship to surfing, right?
Yeah, like, I think so, for sure.
Well, at least we did the one that you see Jack Robbo doing all the time on the telly before heats.
Yeah, the fire breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've been trying to watch those clips. I think he's doing a little bit of a different style, but similar thing, getting himself. That fire breath is a rapid inhale, exhale out the nose, and that actively switches on the diaphragm too, which is a fundamental muscle there for breathing and for opening things up. So I think he's really just switching his body on doing that, but he's got some tummy movements going with that one, I think, too, which, as you said before, you hold emotions and stress in your tummy a lot. So I feel like he's almost massaging that out and trying to get completely clear before those heats. But yeah, the first part of the workshop that you're speaking about is, it's all about like functionality of your everyday breath, right? And you're to make it practical and relevant to people's lives, that they can see and they can understand how it's going to suit them. It's not, from my perspective, the breath isn't like one size fits all. There's going to be certain techniques that suit certain people, depending on what hats they wear, what stresses them out, what responsibilities they have, their family life, their time management, their sleep. So trying to provide people with an understanding of how to tap into certain states using nostril breathing and how it's going to suit their life. So for someone who has an active mind who finds it hard to rest, right, we slow that right down by slowing the breath down. If you slow the breath down, you're going to drop into your parasympathetic nervous system, and that is just going to make your thoughts slower, calmer, clearer. You're going to react less. You're going to make clearer decisions. Then we tap right down to that parasympathetic, where it's going to help you rest, sleep, and things like that. And then we can bring you up into a heightened state by in 30 seconds, you can feel back in the room. So instead of potentially like grabbing that double shot when you don't need it, or just eating some sort of sugary food or something, you just showing people that, hey, this is right under your nose, pardon the pun. And it can be happening in 30 seconds. And just providing examples of how I use them in my life. And so people can hopefully feel a bit of relatability. That's the main goal of the workshop. Because not all the breath work I do is a workshop. If you're experienced and you kind of have already heard me speak about that, then I'll get you in and just do the breath, right? You're here for an experience, I'll do that. But if it's someone I'm seeing for the first time who I sense is either in the early stages of their journey with the breath, or in the early stages, or even someone who's experienced, but just plant those seeds for them to incorporate it into their lives where they see fit, when they can, because the deeper styles are so good for, we've just explained here and spoken about, for the healing modalities and making you feel at one. But you need to be, you need to lie down and do that intentionally in a space that you've set up for yourself. You need time for that. Whereas a lot of these other techniques can be done while you're driving, walking, working on your laptop, right? And they're the ones, like, to me, they're like the pillars of the breath. And if you're healing yourself through deeper breath, and you're also regulating yourself emotionally, physically, and spiritually throughout the day, then you just become so much more of a regulated and balanced human. And then your behaviors are going to trickle out like that. And what better gift really to give everyone around you and you if you're doing that for yourself?
That's such a good point. Yes, so much of the reason you do this stuff is to be a better friend, father, lover.
Yeah, like, for sure. Whatever it is. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Like, people might see it's selfish to go and do these practices for themselves. Like, I've got a family. Like, I don't want to, might not have time to go and spend for an hour by yourself. But the actual effects that your family or those near you are getting from you looking at yourself and looking at your behaviours is so much more, you know what I mean? So trying to just expose that and shift the mentality around it a little bit. Yeah.
Creates a positive loop too. You're doing it for the sake of other people, but you also feel better and they feel better.
Yeah.
And it just creates a positive loop. You're both feeding off each other's better energy and connection. And, you know, that's a route out of mental illness and depression. Interesting to note too, like on the world tour at the moment, talking about how to kind of introduce the masses to these techniques, like mindfulness is everywhere on the tour. You know, Griffin, Tyler, Jack Robbo, you know, the best surfers in the world are doing breath work and meditation before they paddle out. And I mean, you know, surfing with you the other day down at Foster and fucking just looking at how good you were surfing in marginal conditions. I think about it now. I'm like, wow, dude, like you should have made the CT pretty much. Like you would have been so at home on the queue. And
I was only about 200 blokes off, mate.
But like, did you have these techniques back when you were competing on tour? Like, you know, would things have been different, do you think, if you could have hacked the body and mind through these techniques?
Oh, it would have been, I feel like it would have been different, right? Because competitive surfing is, to me, it feels like there's about 100 to 200 people that surf very similar. And for some reason, 10 to 15 of those like crack the code. I mean, you've got your freaks, but there's that sort of 20 odd from say top 10 back that surf very similar. And I feel like a lot of that has to do with what's between the ears. And
100%.
I had and then put something negative on, but like I didn't have that between the ears, like competing. And the thing about these techniques is they clear your mind to execute what you've planned or to make a decision on the fly, and that is competitive surfing. And if you're there like worrying about what red, blue and white have got and you're totally not even focused on you, that wave pops up and you'll just have a melt. And that's competitive surfing. You only get one shot. And so like when I was in that part of my life competing a little bit and surfing bigger, heavier waves, all my breath work was focused around literally just performance of surfing, just expanding the lungs, making myself feel as confident and prepared for a hold down or an intense session, like cardiovascular wise, and as I could. So I didn't use the nostril techniques and the calming in a competitive environment. I feel like it's so paramount, and I reckon it'd be hard pressed to find someone at an elite level who's not tapping into that in some way. And it's essentially just another form of, like, really, meditation and breath work, they go hand in hand. You're just coming back to the breath. You're focusing on something else other than a story going on in your head. And when I competed, stories in my head brought me unstuck 99% of the time. You kind of know deep down you've got the talent, but, I mean, we used to call it the South Coast stranglehold. Like, you start blaming, like, oh, the waves down there are too. Like, people are like, you don't want to travel because the wave is good, or it's not rippable down here. Like, come on, you can do it. It's just you haven't put the work in, and you were uneducated. No one, this wasn't really around back then, and you just went along with the masses.
Mm. Yeah, it's such a powerful tool. I kind of lost my train of thought there. I was listening to you. The South Coast stranglehold's good. But what was it? Oh, come back. Well, I don't know. In any case, those kind of techniques are everywhere in every sport I watch, basically, which is, you know, football, like rugby league. You'll see after tries are scored, the team will get together and start to do nasal breathing. You know, the UFC. Professional surfing, they're basically the three sports I watch, and it is such a clear edge. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I mean, when it comes to performing at an elite level and competing in any kind of discipline, sporting wise, and you're trying to get the edge over your opponent and read the situation and create opportunities that get your team a win or get yourself a win, you need to flow. you can't be overthinking stuff. And flow is just presence under pressure. And unless you can cultivate that presence under pressure, you know, they call pressure's called pressure for a reason. It's all this external noise coming in that's going to change the way you think and act because you're letting it do that. And flow is just the opposite. It's blocking out the pressure, and the pressure's just a story, isn't it, at the end of the day that you're telling yourself. So, yeah, those techniques unlock the flow, and without them, you're just inconsistent. You by the very nature of your mind, you have to be inconsistent. I was having this chat with Kai Wabelli at Pipe during a free surf where, you know, like, he's amazing out there. He's one of the best guys in the world out there, and he's generally such a grindy, consistent performer. And in the Pipe Masters or the Pipe Pro, he surfed amazingly well and just got pinched, clamped on, just got really unlucky, went to sunset, bombed out again early, and he was talking about just like how we're having this long discussion about that exact fact that he surfed so good, but he can't seem to realize his potential. And, you know, I was like, man, you know, have you tried Wim Hof? Have you tried breathwork? And he's like once. And like, yeah, I've been working with this sports psychologist, but, you know, and we talk about stuff, and in my mind, I think therapists are helpful, but ultimately, like, they're not going to be there in the heat with you when the pressure comes down. And that was the contents of our convo, and then a fucking set came through, and he's scratching into it like too deep, not into it. Like, somehow bulldogs his way over the ledge, like, too late, gets completely faded by a burger. I just see the slick of the burger doing an invert off the end bowl. Kaio snaps his board, just gets washed in. I was just like, oh, that just sums up where he's at perfectly in his career right now. Like, yeah. That guy needs some mindfulness. He needs to rip into these kind of pursuits because he's such a talented and greedy surfer in any kinds of conditions. Don't know where he's at. Don't know how he went in Portugal. Really, I saw he pulled off, you know, one of the kind of punts of the event, but okay. Don't know where he finished exactly. But yeah, just an example of like a guy who's just not in rhythm at the moment, not in flow, and not doing the work. And then you look at the guys who are Griffin, Jack, and they're the fucking best in the world. But the difference, as you pointed out, in ability between all these guys is it's a razor-thin margin. And you see guys just going crazy runs. Like, Jake Marshall's eighth in the world right now.
He's ripping.
Man. And Crosby, Colapinto, and, like, you know, there's these guys who are just full of confidence and getting on these hot streaks. And then there's guys who, you know, were, like, up in that kind of top 10 bracket, like Kaio top 15, who are just on the skids, you know, Medina and shit. Like, so you gotta generate some level of consistency in the mind to have any success in any field.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, you kind of, I was thinking before when you spoke about consistency and that, I was almost picturing you at HBC doing a chat, and I'm like, you gotta get down there and lecture them on this. And I kind of haven't come back from that thought. I've been seeing you there cracking the whip. But to speak to that, like, I remember the first time I tried, I can sort of sympathize with KO, and obviously KO is at a far more elite level and has done and achieved and seen far greater things, but in the surfing arena. But I remember the first time
the competitive surfing arena, I think that your records are actually not dissimilar, all things considered.
Like, my mate invited me to do Wim Hof when I would have been so hyper-focused on the physical aspects of breath holding. So I was doing a lot of Nam Baldwin training, which is pool simulations, just building your breath hold ability under physical stress. So getting your cardiovascular up, then holding your breath. And you could see such huge increases in performance in that realm that when I did Wim Hof and did the holds, like, I left going, oh, that's not really going to help me, because I was so calm and I was just lying down in that room. like, I'm never going to be like that in the ocean. So I just let it go, you know, because I wasn't really, I wasn't thinking about the way my mind was working outside of the water or outside of surfing. So when you're so consumed in surfing your performance, you're thinking, I've got to do things physically that fit in that, like, working on my surfing mold. And the breath work, you're kind of like, oh, I know how to breathe, I'm fit. You know, it doesn't really register. So maybe, like, if Kaio could just try some of those techniques, hopefully, and calm that mind and get the consistency that you speak about, he'd be world champ.
Mate, it's possible. He was the Brazil under 16 national champ, same age as Medina. Like, fuck, it's, yeah, anyway. And, it's interesting too, just quickly to note, like, those various modalities, like, you know, the fire breath locks you in, gets you into the parasympathetic, gets you up for the fight or the big waves or, you know, whatever, like, intense experience you're about to step into. And then, you know, Wim Hof is more about, like, detoxifying, cleansing, generating also, though, a lot of energy, a lot of adenosine triphosphate and, you know, amazing for getting rid of lactic acid and muscle soreness and alkalizing the blood and reducing inflammation in the respiratory system. Like, it has a million different benefits. Mm. So it's you know, that's what I took from your breath work session, was that different modalities of breathing apply to different situations, and it's good to have them all in the tool belt and be able to pull one out at any given time. Which brings me to the fact that we're actually doing a boat trip, mate, a Swellian Swellness boat trip. Yes. I think it's the 8th. It's all open for you, 8th of June to the 19th, maybe, something like that. And you can register interest at upthesvellians@gmail.com or via Instagram or whatever. But this will be a big focus of the trip, is exactly this, is breath work and meditation and stretching and basically, you know, every surf trip I do now, like, I can't justify just going somewhere for fucking 10 days or 2 weeks to go surfing. That actually seemed like a waste of time to me at this stage of my life. Like, there needs to be something else. And so for me, every trip I do now always has an element of wellness. I turn them into mini retreats. So me and my mate will, you know, lock into like a daily routine of breath work and meditation, and you know, exchange various stretching and warm up routines, whether we're fucking sleeping in dirt in the desert or fucking camping at Cole Christensen's joint in Hawaii. Like, that's always a component of these surf trips, and I tell you, it adds a whole nother layer to the experience. It creates, there's just a level of consciousness and appreciation of what you're doing, and an improvement in ability, because you're just more present. There's way more flow. You flow. Mm. It's crazy to experience that. And yeah, that's what we're going to be doing in the mats. So tap in.
Yeah, oh, tap right in. That's going to be a sensational trip. Frothing for that one. Thanks for inviting me. Yeah, like when we spoke about wave envy at the start, like, nowhere higher than that, than the Mets, right? So I think, yeah, and to go on to your process, I'm the same. Like, a trip has to feel like it has other things involved in it now to make it valid. And
it takes the focus off the waves themselves. It means that, like, whether, you know, you can go on surf trips and get so hung up on scoring, and just by virtue of having expectations, you've already lost.
Yeah.
Because there's no guarantees in that, that those expectations will be met. But, you know, whether we get 2 foot or 10 foot waves, it won't matter, because the experience of surfing will be enriched, and you'll come away from a trip like this having grown, and you'll have more tools under your belt. And it'll be 10 days of feeling amazing. Which also isn't a guarantee when you're surfing. All these surf trips, fuck, you can get run down and fucked up, like sunstroke, dehydrated, like banged up on the reef, like a million different ways you can feel like shit. You can get faded, you can get bitter and angry and envious. Like, so we're basically going to rip all of those negative components out to a large degree and just enjoy a sublime experience. You too often forget that. You get so hung up on scoring that you forget you're fucking at sea with your mates floating around like, you could be digging a hole.
It'll be so sick. And it'll be, because it'll be the same crew and you'll get to do, it'll almost be a journey on the boat itself because you'll be day by day, whether they've experienced the things we'll run them through before, but they'll almost go on this little personal journey over that 10 days and with their buddies, you know, so they'll all have something to think about. And there's so much downtime on a boat that why not do that, right? While you're not surfing, there's only so much you can surf. And that sun over there absolutely destroys you. And breathwork's great for recovery also. So tap into that, you'll feel better for the surfing the next day. And the Barrenjoey, that's the boat, right?
Yeah.
That's the sickest boat.
Never been on it, but...
I haven't either, but and it's run by John. I guess
Johnny McGrath, old Bondi guy, man. Will he be
in that trip?
I assume so. Yeah. It's cosmic that he's an old Bondi guy who, you know, left town long before my time there, but... That'll be interesting.
Isn't that funny? He's gone from Bondi and then he's come to Ulla Dulla. Right. So there's he currently spends his downtime a lot of the time in Ulla Dulla.
Right?
No way. There's a connection there also. And he's
deeply cosmic.
So experienced. And I heard that a few of my mates did a trip there 2 years ago on the Barrenjoey. He said it was just plush. Everything went so smoothly. He's so experienced, so he knows all the joints, few secret ones, gets you in the spot on the days you need. I'm absolutely frothing.
Mate, it's going to be amazing. Oh, I cannot wait. I'm so excited. I've been in the Manse once before, but, you know, at this stage of my life, with now these tools, like the experience like is going to be so rich, and it's amazing to be able to share it with, you know, fuck, mate, the people I meet for this podcast, unbelievable. I had the funniest interaction today, just moments ago, running up to surf in the bay at Byron, and felt the gut rumble, and had to blow up the main beach toilet. And as I walked out, there's this redheaded Irishman, and he's kind of like, he sees me come out of the cubicle, and he's like kind of did a double take, and I was like, fuck, what's going on here? Like, I just didn't know. I thought maybe, I was kind of a little bit, like, off it in a way. I was like, fuck, why is this guy giving me the what for in the fucking cubicle? Just get out of my way so I can wash my hands. And then as we're on the way out, he goes, mate, I love the pod. And he goes, a big part of the reason I actually came to Australia was this podcast. And, you know, we got talking and... Yeah, you know, he's just an Irishman fucking out here on a surf trip with his missus planting trees in Grafton. So shout out to Thomas, you fucking mad icon. Dog.
Come on the boat, Tommy, let's go.
Fucking hell. Store up those coins from planting trees in Grafton and get on the Barrenjoey. So always amazing characters, just fucking a bunch of blue-collar grit merchants, guaranteed. And another project you got going on, Yun Takesh, who's down at Swellness, have got the Evolve workshops. Is that what it's called?
Oh, the original one we did last year was Evolve. This one's just called Surf, Move, Breathe.
Cool.
It's just basically the name says it all. So Takesh is an amazing movement practitioner, Zen Shiatsu, just amazing at opening the hips, lumbar, releasing some of that trauma, which can come in physically or mentally, physically or emotionally. He can remove that and help target that through his movement. It's incredible stuff. Targeted to surfing in a way. It doesn't have to be a surfer, but we're going to make this one. The Evolve one was more open to anyone in the community or anyone who was interested. This one we're going to bring a bit more of a surf component to. So his exercises and my breathing will be more targeted towards surf-related performance and tapping into the flow. And then we'll also do some coaching alongside that as well. So that's happening down in on the far south coast, like just south of Bermagui.
Wow.
In May. Deep. So, yeah, there's a really cool space there called Murra Dream Retreats. A big, what do you call it? You messaged me and called it. Like a big dome, right?
Oh, geodesic dome. You're joking. Pioneered at the Age of Aquarius Festival in Nimbin, mummy. Architectural exploits. They were pushing, but yeah, the geodesic dome, it's a magical construction that's just laid in the doldrums of alternative culture for too long. Good on you for bringing it back.
Yeah, so come get in the dome too if you're keen, and then come to the Manse, we can just go ham. But yeah, some exciting things coming. I'm just frothing for them all and loving it.
Sick, mate. Well, thanks so much for your time. And, yeah, can't wait to see more of you and hear more about what you're doing.
Thank you. And, yeah, props to you guys for offering that experience to the men's too. I don't think I've – I mean, I haven't noticed anyone doing a similar thing and offering that to their audience, their followers, you know. So it's pretty cool. And be so – like just to – imagine just 10 lads or something, or even like, you know, swelling queens.
Yeah, fucking earth.
What do you call them? Swelliettes?
Swelliettes, yeah.
Swelliette, and just like having a sick crew out there with the whole time would be that good.
Absolutely. Sometimes we go to India and get dysentery in the Himalayas. Other times we go to the Ments and get barley belly. But, mate, it's always a laugh and there's cones galore.
Cheers, Smith.
On you, mate.